of the Chelsea Skidmore Show. I'm here today with my guest, Killian McHugh from Killian's Workshop. Hi.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Are you in Los Angeles?
Yes, that's where we're based, in Los Angeles. Yeah.
So I had done your workshop probably like 7 years ago. It was are you still doing it in person, or are you on Zoom solely right now?
So right now we're on Zoom, but I'm trying to get, I want some things to be live and some things to be Zoom, because that's not going away. So the adult workshop, my main workshop that everybody takes first, I want that to be Zoom, because I do every aspect of the new post-pandemic world. So self-submission is 1 week, first call to Zooms. You still get the lessons from Killian's workshop, but now you can be anywhere in the country or the world and take it. So that's really cool. Callback class, I want to have live as soon as possible, because they're going to be live. And I want them to be a hybrid, actually. Improv for commercials, I want to be live. And then the actor's gym, which you don't have to take the workshop to take the gym, but you should. But that's like a place where we go and practice every week. And so what I've done with the new gym since the pandemic world is we're doing, instead of once a week, you would come live to the studio every Friday and work out, just like a gym. It was $30 a month. So now we're doing two auditions a week. And the first one is self-submission. So you sign up, and on Sundays you say, I want my spot in the gym. We send you the information, self-submission. You got to follow the rules, all that stuff. And boom, you get your critique midweek. And then you get a time for your Friday live Zoom callback at the moment. What I want to do is have the callback live, because we have to practice that as well. And it's been 2 years since we've been doing it. So we really need to practice that. And then I want to have the Zoom. It's for everybody too, because if you're in New York or you're in Kansas or wherever, you can just Zoom in at your scheduled callback time on Friday.
Mm.
So I'm trying to do a hybrid of everything, but every time we try to rent a place, another wave hits and everybody's sick and gas is $10 and all this stuff. So I'm like, let's just keep it Zoom. You don't have to look for parking. You can be in your home. You don't have to worry about getting sick. And people I've known, so I don't want to be negative, but in the last month, I have 17 people that I know who have COVID.
Wow. Yeah.
In the last month, 17. And two had to be hospitalized, and they were 3 times boosted.
Ah.
Yeah, I don't hang out with anybody who's not boosted. And so
yeah,
they were boosted and 2 of them had to go to the hospital.
Fuck, that sucks.
So I'm like, you know what? Let's just keep it Zoom for a little while, but the gym is going to come back. I'm hoping the improv for commercials will come back in October. I want that live.
Yeah, so since doing classes on Zoom, did you have to integrate a whole other section on how to properly present yourself on camera and... Yeah. Include or just kind of like rework your syllabus?
No, the lessons for commercials are the same. The things that I teach are the same, but yes, there's different now venues. So week one is most closely mimics the Melrose class. You come in, you audition, you get your critique, you get a new process. That's what I teach, a new commercial process. Then we redo them and you get your critique there. And so that's pretty much the same, but then week two is self-submission week. So we send you sides the day before, and you have a time limit and a place to send them. Week three is first call Zoom audition. And then week four, we do our thing, and we have a very, very, very thorough Q&A in week four. So I changed all the auditions, all the copy, all of that to match the scenarios that we're doing. But the lessons are universal,
mm-hmm.
what I teach.
Yeah.
So it wasn't much of a change. I was the last, everybody started teaching before me on Zoom. I was the last holdout. I don't know why I would think this, but for some reason I thought like the governments of the world would handle this. And I'm like a smart person. But what this pandemic taught us is that literally nobody in any country on this planet that's in power, that's in government, has any right to be there.
Mm.
None of them have any skills capable of handling a problem of this nature.
Yeah.
That's what I learned.
Yeah, we're not as prepared as we had hoped.
No.
That is blank.
Everyone is, look, I should say it this way. Every elected official is ill-equipped to be in their elected position.
And whose fault is that?
Ours.
I know. Are we seeing our part? Are the people of America seeing their part?
Are the people of America doing what?
Seeing their part in this.
Seeing their part?
Yeah.
I think...
That's not a real question.
Half of us are not. I mean, who... I don't want to go off on a rant, but like now these crazy nuts, they've gotten rid of smallpox vaccines in Kansas. You don't have to have one to go to school. How wonderful it's going to be when your kid comes home crippled. I mean, like, you know what I mean? They're it's a terrible thing.
Yeah.
And now, because we know we can get rid of it, it's your fault, mom and dad, that your child just lost the use of their legs for the rest of their lives.
I'm in my daughter's room and you're already guilt tripping me.
Can you imagine? So like, get the shot.
Yeah.
I don't understand how fighting science became political. I don't know when that happened.
Mm.
Like, it's just weird.
Yeah. Do you?
I already got the monkeypox one. I already got that one.
You did? Oh, what was that like?
Nothing.
Yeah. It's like a rash for like.
You go like that and you. Mm-hmm.
Oh, you got the vaccine.
Oh, no, I didn't have monkeypox. Oh, no, I got the vaccine.
I met and I was like, how is that for you?
That's hilarious.
I know. So I'm curious
to be clear, I did not have it, but I got a vaccine for it.
Yeah. Okay, good. So on your end of things as a commercial director, a teacher, do you sense the difference of energies versus if you're being in a room with a student who's auditioning versus being on Zoom? Can you still feel that? Because I know that it would be more ideal in person, like having the experience. And I know that, you know, there's such
an energy.
Huh?
I address this in class, and here's my answer.
Okay.
I don't know how people will take this.
Just be yourself.
Me? That's all I am.
No.
That's to my detriment. And so here's what I've been saying in class. I've been getting on Clubhouse and emails and Facebook and everything, Instagram messages. Killian, I just miss in person, and I miss that interaction and the energy and, you know, your notes and blah, 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 blah. Here's my answer. For 20 years, all I've heard was actors bitching about traffic and bitching about parking and bitching about the lobby and bitching about waiting and bitching about over-directing and bitching and bitching and bitching. And now all of a sudden we miss the old days.
Yeah.
I call bullshit. Self-submission is awesome. You could do it 100 times before you send it in. You could make sure it's just right for you.
How do you not drive yourself crazy when you get to do a self-tape and you have too much time, too much opportunities to just keep taking takes? Like, at what point do you
get it in within the hour? Get it in, do your work and get it in within the hour. People wait till the last day, the last minute, and then they're stressed, their computer didn't, the link didn't work, something, boom, boom, boom. Get it in within the hour. Nothing in the commercial world should take you more than 20 minutes if you do my technique.
And so let's start from the beginning and then I want to hear about your background, how you got to doing what you're doing, and then we'll get into your philosophy and what you teach. So where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in the Pocono Mountains in Pennsylvania, Jersey border.
Yeah, we went there for after prom.
That's right.
Rented a house there. I'm from New York.
Yeah. Everyone does that and they go there for their honeymoons and it's a big skiing place. So I grew up skiing. A lot of skiing.
And there's the hotel that has the champagne glass.
Mm-hmm.
That it's like an adult fantasy hotel.
And it's beautiful Mount Airy Lodge. That's where everybody went to.
Yes, that commercial. Oh my God, what a throwback. I always heard that growing up.
I worked there. I worked there for like a summer. Mm-hmm. And but I can't say that I have fond memories of that area. I really only ever dreamt of getting to California.
Mm.
And so as soon as I could, I did. And so like right after college, I just got my car and left for California.
And did you, were you in plays growing up? Did you study drama or did, I'm assuming?
No, not where I lived. I was a hick, which is different than a redneck, but I was a hick. And very homophobic place, very not open place. That's why I didn't like it at all. Very not open. And so like playing tennis meant you were a fag. So like we didn't even have tennis where I lived. And so it was baseball, football, basketball, hockey. Anything else, you don't vary. Wanting to be in a play, they'd have killed me. No. So I always tell people I was a closeted actor. So I told my family that I was going to be a lawyer. I was supposed to be a mafia lawyer, a mob attorney. And I it was like 2 weeks before the LSATs and I had really long hair. And I called my parents and I said, I have good news and bad news. The good news is I cut my hair because my mother hated it. I was like, the bad news is I'm moving to California to be an actor.
How did they take it?
They didn't talk to me for like a year. Didn't go
what
well.
Worse, right?
Not supportive, really, until you get in your first commercial, until you book your first show, and then everybody's parents change and talk to all their friends about how supportive they were your whole life.
Right, and how they always knew you would be.
I always knew. My mother once said to me, we got in such a fight one day. We're at dinner here in LA, and she said, I just can't understand why you never went to Juilliard. And I was like, you bitch, how could those words come out of your mouth? You would have never let me do it. Like, I can't believe you just said that.
Yeah.
You would have never allowed that.
That's so funny. Yeah. But
things change.
Did you want to go to, was LaGuardia High School around when you were in high school? That performing arts school in New York?
I wanted to be anywhere other than where I was. Mm-hmm. So I would have gone anywhere, but where I really wanted to go was the Actor's Studio.
Okay.
Because I had heard about that. I didn't hear about the other things. So I really wanted to go to the Actor's Studio after high school.
And can you remind me again, which style that is? Is that?
Well, the Actor's Studio, I think, is a lot of method.
Okay, yeah.
But it's, Lee Strasberg, I think, taught there. Uda taught there. And so I wanted to just go experience that.
Mm-hmm.
So Marilyn went there and everybody with Doris Roberts went there and everybody went there. Eli Wallach taught there. So I just wanted to do what they did.
Yeah. So when you moved out here and you landed, how soon did it take you to book? What was your experience like? Did you feel
I moved to San Diego.
Okay.
I didn't want to come out here with a job, without a job. And so I had a job in New Jersey. I moved to Jersey after school for 2 years. And then my company transferred me to San Diego. Then, because I got to be an actor, I got to get to LA. And this was a long time ago. LA's changed a lot. San Diego is the most beautiful place. It's the best city in this country. I wouldn't say the world, but it's the best city in the country. It is gorgeous. The first thing I noticed when I got to town was there are no bugs, because we all have to have screens and everything and mosquitoes. Yeah. There's no bugs. And the second thing I noticed was my alley is so clean. Like, this place is so weird. And so I fell in love with San Diego. I stayed there for like 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then literally one morning I woke up and I was like, Jesus Christ, I've been here 4 years. I got to get out of here. And I left that month and quit my job and moved to LA. Then I didn't know anything about anything. So, and I tell this to people in class. So what I did was I did two things. One, I made sure I got into an acting class right away, a theatrical class. At the time I went to a class and she allowed you, whatever class you were taking, you could go to her master class for free. And so that was on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday nights. So for a year, every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I was in the back of that class, just watching. I didn't talk to anybody. I just watched People were on shows. These people were bookers because I didn't know anything about anything. So I did that for a year, just kept my mouth shut and watched. At the same time, I also became a non-union theatrical extra in movies.
Mm-hmm. I've done a ton of extra work.
I didn't know how movies were made.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about being on set. So that was a great experience to teach me. Do you want a funny story?
Yes.
Funny story. So I'm a young hick and I'm in downtown LA and I'm on the Harry Houdini movie with the dude who is from the Tom Hanks, who it was about a band. He was dating Christina Applegate. I forget his name, but I forget the name of the movie. That Thing You Do. Yes. Yeah. So he's the star of That Thing You Do. And now he's on this Harry Houdini movie and he's playing Harry Houdini. And they picked me to be the extra who's standing next to him, and I'm a cop, and it's like the 1920s. And so I have the whole full gear. We have it's a beautiful downtown theater, and the balconies, and everybody's packed with extras. And Christina's in the front row to watch her boyfriend, and the director, and everybody's there. And they have a camera on the dolly, right? And they're gonna zoom in, and it's just me and him. And on action, so I'm supposed to bring him, I'm his security. So two things. One was before we shot, he was being super sweet to me and talking to me like a normal person. And I turned to him and I said, "Can you please stop talking to me?" And he said, "What?" Because like he thought I was like this method person or whatever. And I was like, "Can you please stop talking?" And he goes, "What?" And I was like, "I'm pretty sure I'm going to faint." And So he was like, "Oh." Because I never done it. Huh?
Because you were nervous?
No, because of my nerves, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Because I was just like, I think I'm going to faint, so please don't talk to me right now. And so then they call action, and the camera rolls in. Well, I'd never seen that before. So I'm staring at the camera. And then they call cut, and there's hundreds of people here, and big stars, and the director goes, "Cut, Killian, yes? Can you please not stare directly into the camera when we call action?" And I said to him, "Oh my God, I'm sorry. I didn't know I was in the shot." He's like, "It's just you two." So that was my first debut in Hollywood.
And how was the next take?
It was great.
You could pull it together.
I pulled it together, yes.
That's so funny.
That was my first real, like, people talk to me. But what I learned was I don't know anything about this. I am not ready for any of this. I have to figure this out. I have to get to class. I have to learn what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I say to people is in class, if you're a writer, if you're doing scripts, if you're doing something, don't hesitate. Don't talk about it. Just get it done because 12 other people are writing your script. At any given time, no matter what idea you have, 12 other people are doing it. And it's whoever gets there first. So I'm there with these extras. And I did it for like 6 months or whatever. They're a very specific group of people. So I wrote a pilot called Extras. Guess who else did?
Yeah, Ricky Gervais.
And so I couldn't even watch the series because I watched the pilot. We had the same jokes.
Yeah.
We had the exact same lines. And I was so furious, I never watched this series.
Hold on. Because
I was so bitter. I couldn't take it. But so That's the big lesson. I have three examples in my life. I've had in my notebook a story for 7 years. Cut to Netflix last year, comes out with The Mormon Murders. So don't sit it and let it sit in your notebook for 7 years. Get it done if you have something to do and something to say, because 12 other people are writing it.
That is so true. I love that. Mm-hmm. And there's so much talking in this town.
Yes.
So what I also got from your story about sitting in the back is just that you were hungry and you wanted to learn. And I think that there are obviously a couple different types of actors, and you see that less and less. It's so much of people just wanting to get famous today.
Yeah. Well, also, and social media does all that and everything, but also I had dreamed of this my whole life since I was four. So just being in an acting class from where I'm from and where I was raised and the people around me growing up, this was so amazing. Like, I didn't even ever have to book. Just being in that class was a win. And I remember I did join an acting class in San Diego right away. I did my first scene and I did very well. And the teacher was actually making jokes about why are you here and blah, blah, blah. And after the class, everybody left the theater. I forgot about this till just now. I sat in that theater and just, I got goosebumps right now thinking about it because I'm there. I just drank in what just happened. I was in a scene and I was actually really good. And then the next, as soon as I was done, everybody came up to me and they were like, can you do a scene with me next week? And I was like, okay, I've never had this before because I'm always picked last, you know, for everything in sports. And so I have no depth perception. I can't catch a ball. And so I'm always used to being picked last. And now everybody came up to me after class and was like, hey, can I do a scene with you? And so that was so cool. And I just sat in that theater alone. And I started to cry, but like super tears of joy, which I've never done before in my life. And so just that was a win.
That's, I really feel that too. How has that, so that whole idea of like being picked last, how has that carried throughout your life? Because I've had that too. You know, it's like that fear of like, I'm going to be picked last in the dodgeball game or whatever.
And I was super popular. I was super popular in high school and college.
Yeah, it's not even that.
I wasn't bullied ever. I was just a super closet straight kid and had all friends. But I was very funny. And so that's why people, I could get away with things. But always pick last for sports. Because it was the same group of us every day. Every day we had to play basketball or football or baseball after school. Not formal. But we had to play street games. Well, I'm there on the street. I have to play. And they all had to play with me. So they were all like, they would all just go the same thing. They'd be like, Killian, we'll take him.
Has that shown up though in your professional or creative life? And how have you worked against that?
Well, Betty Davis said, always be first. And as soon as I heard her say that, that changed everything for me. So I'm not good at sports, so I don't do them. Figure out what you're good at and then be great at it. And so I get every job I ever had when I was waiting tables, every single place tried to make me a manager. So I'm really good at what I'm really good at. So what I tell people in class is all the time, you don't have to be good at everything. You can just be deadpan guy. Now in the commercial world, I think we should be able to do anything for 30 seconds, but there's lots of people in Hollywood who make their living as deadpan guy, you know? So find out what you do and do it better than everyone else, you know, whether that's baking or cooking or making candles or whatever, you know, I became the best in LA for commercial workshops. It was purposeful and calculated. Everything I do was planned. People think I curse a lot. And when that first started, I chose to do that.
Interesting.
Yes. And so people think I just curse to curse. I don't. I do it for specific reasons. I think of my class when I first started it and put it together, I kind of thought of it as my show. And so every night I'm up performing. And I've had a great run. I've had the longest running show in Hollywood, 20 years.
I love
that. Yeah. And so for me, so I'm performing every night. So people say, oh, you don't act anymore. No, I do it every night. But I'm giving you the best information, the most current information. But how do you deliver it? There's only so many things you can teach in the commercial world or acting world. So what do people respond to? The teacher and their delivery, their philosophy. And so I worked very hard at that and becoming who I was. None of this is random.
I love that. How did you develop and settle into that character or that performance?
I mean, it's me. It's not a character. It's me, but it's like me being open and honest in a one-man show. So I curse. So I was like, ugh, people are going to be upset about cursing. And then, and I thought to myself, no, I have to be honest. And this is how I say this line. And I put the F word in there because that's the way I talk. So in acting, you know, when you're stuck and everybody just goes blue, people think that's more cheap. You know, that's just a cheap, easy way out. Uh-huh. That's not what I was doing. I was just trying to be as honest as possible. And this is the way I speak from where I grew up. And people have gotten offended.
Yeah.
But most people laugh because I place it in the right place and it's for the right purpose.
That's so funny.
And I don't obviously do it in my children's class or anything like that.
It's funny you bring it up because when I was told about your class, you know, everyone knows about your workshop if you want to be an actor, if you want to do commercials in Los Angeles and anywhere else in the country. And everyone's like, but he's tough, or, you know, but like, he, you know, don't get offended. And I remember I was so excited going into it because it's like you're going to like a show, it feels like, and you're like, ooh, like, I want to see what this experience is like. And then you get to kind of be like, oh, it's not as bad, like, it's fun, or like,
not bad at all.
Yeah. And it totally makes sense knowing you're from the East Coast and like, you're just being you and you're not being one of these like, you know, you're not doing like the whole acting teacher thing. Like, you're just, what's up? Like, this is
the one, the number one thing when I was putting this together was I have to tell everybody the truth, but I'm going to tell you the truth in the big picture scheme of things and how to book. This is what my director would say. This is what I'm going to say. So I'm never personal. So I don't comment on your looks or your weight or your age or anything like that, because anybody can book a commercial. You know, I once had an actor come to me, and you have to be a little psychic if you're going to be a good teacher, I think. And I think it just comes from 20 years of reading people and casting. And so anyway, we're doing the private and I said, something's wrong. I don't understand why you're doing this. What's really happening here in this room? And she started to cry. And she said, do you think I can do this? And I said, of course, everyone can book a commercial. That's why I do commercials, not theatrical. Do you think I'm too heavy and I'm too overweight? And I said, well, first of all, you're not overweight at all. Have you seen America? Like, she wasn't at all. Yeah. And she's like, I just took a private with blah, blah, blah. And she told me I'm too fat. And I was like, she couldn't have said that. As actors hear things different. We all hear things. I was like, tell me the exact words she said. She said, you're too fat. And I was like, okay, I apologize for everyone in my industry that that happened. But first of all, everyone knows fat is funny. Mm-hmm. 100 to 200 years. So like, first of all, she's completely wrong. Yeah. Secondly, you're not fat. So let's get rid of that and let's get on with the private, you know? So I'm never ever personal because it's not a personal business. Mm-hmm. I gave you a note. You didn't take my note. Boom. I'm going to say that. If you want to book, you listen to me. If you don't want to book, you still can, but there's a difference between booking 2 a year and 20 a year. If you listen to me, you're going to be more towards the 20 side.
What are some of the biggest common mistakes that you see people make in an audition?
The number one, every casting director will tell you, not a teacher, casting director, actors don't listen. In fact, I wrote a book with Mike Dolphy from my class. He's a big star now. And we wrote a book before the pandemic and we have to write a new one because the pandemic happened, everything changed. But he sent me as a joke, a book from like the 1940s about actors teaching acting. And like in the first page, the guy said, just so you understand, when you tell an actor to go left, they're gonna go right. And I thought that was so hilarious because it was 1940 and we're still saying the same thing. So every casting director will tell you that actors aren't listening. In the group explanation, they're not doing what we're telling them to do. There's many factors. One, they're so excited to be in the room. But what actors don't understand is that this is our job. We do this 10, 12 hours a day, and nobody in the commercial world cares about your dreams. That's not me being mean. That's me telling you the situation. We have to get this shot. We're making a 30-second movie. And I need you to walk from here to there and sit down and pick up the gum and put it in your mouth and show empowerment. That's what I need from you today. All these other hopes and dreams you're bringing into the room, you can go explore them when you book this spot and get the money. That's all my world is. my contributions to the arts for 20 years is that I'm giving actors a way for them to subsidize their artistic life. You come in, you do what they tell you to do, you collect the check, and then you go join your theatrical class. Then you start a theater company. Then you express all these things inside. Right now, I just need you to sit in the chair and eat the fucking chip.
You make it so simple. Like this explanation, it's just, it really just takes everything away and makes it so much easier, I think, for someone to just go in and do it when you put it that way.
And then, but so many people are coddling you, saying, oh, I want to hear about your hopes and dreams. I don't care. I got to sell this gum or I'm fired. If I don't get this shot, my director goes to a different casting office. Mm-hmm. And they told me what they need. So therefore, I'm telling you what I need, because we all have a boss. Mm-hmm. And if we all do our jobs correctly, we all get to keep working. I work as casting, the director works, the people who make the gum work, everybody works when we all do our jobs.
What about interpreting the copy?
So 95 or more percent of the time they want improv. So then you should, but it doesn't mean throw it all away and start over and just be groundlings person for 2 minutes and do your shtick. Mm-hmm. That's equally annoying to my directors as actors who just read from the board. But yes, you should be just throwing in a little something somewhere to show them that I have the chops to be on set with you.
Do you think that someone...
And I had to start always be first. So there was no callback class before I got to town. I was the first callback class. And 30% of the people who take that class book within 4 weeks of taking it for 20 years. That's an insane statistic. Most months were up to 30, 40, 50%. Last month, nobody showed for week 4. They were all on set. So... most months were up to 30, 40, 50% by week 4. There was no improv for commercials class before I got to this town. Everybody just had improv class and commercial class. I had to link the two because it's not the groundlings. And these big improvisers are coming in and they're fucking it up, in quotes, fucking it up, because they think it's about being funny, but mm-hmm. it's not.
And doing a character and being super big.
No, exactly. It's not that. It's just throwing a little something to show them who you are. Mm-hmm. And it's not your show. The gum is still the star. The Pepsi can is still the star. The car is the star. I don't care how big you get on the A-list ladder. You will never be the star of a commercial. But they're all in them mm-hmm. for the money.
How do you know whether you should be big or small? And is that like is that following the trend of kind of what's going on in commercials when you're going?
You should always err on the side of small until they tell you mm-hmm. in this day and age.
You know how I feel like people try to do like a character of who they think you should be in a commercial? Like, I'm going to be like this, you know? Yeah.
That's why you take Killian's workshop to learn what they're really asking you.
Yeah. And you know? is that from knowing the product and what they've done in the past, interpreting them? How do you?
Everything combined. It's listening to the director. It's listening to the casting director. It's listening to the group explanation. It's understanding the product, understanding what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. It's again, it's not about you. It's about understanding the need the people have for this product and how are we reaching that need? I don't teach acting, I teach advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first thing I say to you in week one. You're no longer in an acting class, you're in an advertising class, because that's what I teach. And I teach audition technique, because that's a thing that no one knows. Spend $100,000 at the University of Washington Drama School, you get to town, you can't slate.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, let's talk about slating. So do you think it's good? Is that the time to add in your personality there? Or is that just
say your name?
Huh?
You should have a light and smile in your eyes. And here's, because people always bring up slates. If you're in an acting class and they teach you slates, they've just stolen your money and they have nothing to teach you that night. And so make sure you keep that part in that I just said that. because they have nothing to teach you that night, because no one gives a fuck about your name.
Mm-hmm.
You should have a light and smile in your eyes always. You should look like a pleasant person who wants to be in the room. And when anyone asks your name, tell them your name. That's it. people are constantly asking me, should I say hello, good morning, whatever. No one cares. Hi, I'm Kelly McHugh.
Yeah.
And they never, until Casting Network's LA Casting came around, the slate was never a thing. You were a number. So we would pack up all the size sheets at the end of the day with your headshot. And we would, there were tapes back then. I still say tape all the time. So we would put you on tape all day. And then we would put that on the top of the size sheets and with a rubber band and ship it off to wherever the ad agency and the director live. And so you're a number to them. They don't call you back by name. They would call you back. They would say, bring me back number 3, 11, 12, 14, 16, 32, boom, boom, boom. It's just because of technology now, your name is right there. So no one cares about your name. But, and there are a few people who have a trick to their name, but it totally works for them. So, you know, there's an exception to every rule. I wouldn't try to wow them with your name, but there are two people off the top of my head that I can think of who say something funny when they say their name. And it's just like, okay, that's just what she does.
Right. It works for them. It's not going to work
for them. For them. It doesn't work for everybody.
What about how should an actor dress for a commercial?
See, here's the thing. I'm going to bottom line it for you. It's a job interview. And actors don't think of that because they're thinking about their dreams. But it's a job interview. You show up when they tell you to show up. You wear what they tell you to wear. You do what they tell you to do. That's called a job interview. And I think if more actors thought of it like that, they'd have better results. Mm. You know, professionalism. It's about professionalism. And so I remember watching, I was walking up Vine one day, and this actor pulled into the spot frantically and opened his car door, and all these headshots fell out, and he was all disheveled, and he was throwing shit in his car, and he was trying to get ready, and he ran to the studio. And I was just like, you should just go home. You're not going to book that. You're too stressed.
Mm.
You know, it's a job interview, man. And I can prove actors don't think of it. And every casting director will tell you, we have to overpack our sessions every day because 20% won't show up for that opportunity. That makes me very angry. Mm. Not because it's making my day harder. It makes me angry because I gave you a spot. And some other actor could have, you went to Venice or whatever, but maybe some other actor really needed that job. And they would have come into the room, been professional, and rocked the shit out of it. And maybe they just found out that they lost their day job or their night job, or somebody in the family has cancer, or they have to send money back, or their rent went up. And they would have rocked the shit. So I resent people who don't show up or who take it lightly. I really do.
What can an actor do? Say they were having a great audition and then there's just something they do that's like, I don't fucking like them anymore. Like, what can you do to fuck it up?
Oh, well, there's many things. So that's why I always say less is more in between takes. I've never had that experience where, probably because I'm a teacher, but I've never said that I can think of, I don't like him personally, so don't call him in. In fact, I can prove that statement because there are people, when I was waiting tables and bartending, then I got into casting. I was a bartender who didn't drink behind the bar like everybody else did. And when waiters would come up and everybody expects shots, you know, the servers would come up and they all expect shots. Everyone knew, don't come up during my shift for shots because I'm not giving you any. Because I was employed by this other person and I have to do a job. So whenever I'm employed, it's never about me, and it's always about the person who's paying me. So when I got into casting and I saw this role, there were waiters, servers that I hated, bartenders that I hated, because they were dicks and they were cheap. If anybody doesn't tip out the bus people, I hated them. And so properly, and but she's right for this. And I would say to my boss, I'd be like, I know this person. And so I'd call up and I'd say, hey, come into this audition. And these were people I didn't like in life personally, mm-hmm. but they're right for that part. So for me, personality doesn't really matter if you're right for that part. Now, this was 20 years before Me Too. Okay. So yes, if I find out somebody's some crazy, you know, abuser, no, I'm not going to bring them in anymore. But just me saying, I don't like his tie. I know people like that. I've worked for people like that, but I've never been that, because you're shooting yourself in the foot. My client could leave. See, the thing about casting is your clients aren't bound to you. They can leave after the last job and never come back. And so to me, it's always, who's going to please this director? Who's going to be perfect for this part? Yeah, I know her. She's a bitch, but I don't care. She won't be in front of my clients. But yeah, I didn't like working with her when we were waiters. He's an asshole. I've seen him be an asshole. He's a dick. I would never hang out with him personally, but this is the guy that I need. So yeah. For me, I never cast that way.
When an actor is taking a note from a director, do you suggest any specific, like, oh, I love that, great, or just do it? Do you think it helps to, is there any like specific, like statements like an actor could say to receive a note in a session that's going to make a difference, or none of that shit matters?
No, if I tell you to do something, when I call action, just do it.
Right.
It's all much easier than everyone's making it out to be.
I know, I'm trying to come up with questions that I feel like could be asked in a class, but
yeah. But that's my answer in class, because I get this question in class.
Yeah.
When somebody gives you a note, do what they tell you to do.
But it's really, see, you really just make it that simple. And it's really like, I feel like you're just constantly bringing everything back down to like a super simple place. And then enough of the time, then everything gets out of your head and you can just focus and do it.
So you could have just this simple class. But what I did was I heightened the experience because I'm making it like an actual casting. So again, go back to always be first. When I got to town, none of these people treated it like an actual audition. I'm the first person who put an exhibit E out for you to sign. It was in a guy's garage. It's in the one woman had it in her living room. There was only three classes in town. And so nobody was treating it like this. So when I decided to do this, I was like, well, we have to make it like casting, because that's what I know. And that's what's going to help them. I don't want to be in somebody's living room.
You want to give an experience.
There's no stakes. So I made it like a casting. And when we do the audition part, I'm not a friendly casting director, because that's who I worked for. Really horrible people towards the actor.
I think
now
from
I hear them all years later, they're all Zen and all this bullshit. I know them all. I worked for all of them.
Yeah. Did you still do this? I think what I remember is you sign in, you're sitting, everyone's on the side benches, and then you walk in, you don't look at anyone, and then you're like, okay, who's first?
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
I bring them in for group explanation. Mm-hmm. No. I think, yeah. Well, When I started it, I was my own camera person. But then as it got, I had Jacob do it. So he would give the group explanation, and then I'd be like, let's go. Because it's a session. Now, some people can't handle that. Some people, but I'm not like that when I'm teaching. This is the audition part. And what I realized to be a good teacher, some people need to be pushed out of the nest. And some people need a hand up into the boat. But in an audition situation, the casting directors aren't worrying about which one is which. So you got to figure out your own shit and get in there and do what we ask you to do. Then after that nerve-wracking experience, now we can have a class and discuss what just happened. And I'm going to tell you how to do it right. And now we're going to do it again and see if we improve it all. And so, but yes, I'm very militant in the audition process. And it's been 20 years and I still have people not get it. Most people do. Some people, I just had a person the other day say all this stuff about me in an email. And I was like, oh my God, if you knew anything about me. I said, first of all, it's Zoom. We don't have any interaction like we used to. I've never spoken to you. I gave a group explanation. And then you came into the room and I called action. And that was the extent of our interaction. But this person's emailing me saying how awful this experience was and how mean I am and blah, 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 blah. And I want my money back. And I said, none of this happened. First of all, on Zoom, I'm not even meaning you. You can't yell on Zoom. It's weird. Okay. I would yell in the studio and get people into shape and in a frenzy because this is going to be chaotic on set. And I need you to experience all this and work through it. That's what I'm trying to get you to do. But on Zoom, the first class I had on Zoom, I was like, okay, you look like a crazy person. If you do on Zoom. And they're in their apartment. Yeah. Some of them are drinking wine in class. Like, I can't be yelling anymore. So I'm not even mean anymore. So that's all gone.
And that's plus, a bummer.
The Me Too, you got to change and everything. And millennials don't like to hear no. And so the Gen Zers can't hear that no. They don't hear the word no.
Is that, have you had to make any adjustments for the new sensitive generation?
Mm-hmm.
That bums me out because I really do feel like your class is an experience.
Well, the pandemic did it, really. That's what changed the experience. It's still a great experience. You're still getting all the knowledge, but that show part of it, it was gone.
Yeah.
But I noticed, I didn't change, but I noticed before the pandemic, and I talked to other friends in casting, we had lunch and I said, this is what's happening. I noticed that there's a new generation of people who can't take this critique.
Mm-hmm.
And so although I didn't change how I ran the audition, how I said this and boom, 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 and the group explanation, I did change slightly. I still tell the absolute truth, but you can deliver it a little differently because these people aren't equipped to hear it in this way. So I don't blame them. I blame, I think, their parents who were my generation, who we grew up with maybe not a lot of coddling, you know? And so we wanted to make everything better for them. So they had all the toys and they, of course, you're great. And everybody gets a sticker for everything in school. And then they get to town and they're like, but my mom said I'm great. Like, I've had actors come up to me to write checks. I was always cool, the cool guy in town. Everybody made you pay up front. I made you pay half when you didn't, and half in class. I had actors, 30-year-old actors ask me, I don't know how to write a check. Killian, how do I write this check?
What?
I know. That's cute, but scary. But so yeah, I noticed the trend, but I didn't change the way I'm running Killian's workshop. But I did soften the tone a bit. But the thing is, I'm never personal, so they can't come back and say, he said this about me.
Mm-hmm.
But now everybody gets butthurt over everything. Mm-hmm. So if you make a general statement, everyone's really upset.
What's with, like, every commercial has, like, the quirky...
Like, you're probably not as loud to say butthurt. I just said that.
Butthurt? Of course you can.
You think so?
Yeah.
Because you know you're not allowed to say, I'm not allowed to say, hey, I'm so proud of you for this podcast that you did this.
What do you mean?
Because you can't say proud of you anymore. Because
wait, are you serious?
Yeah, no, you can't say I'm proud of you. When somebody books now, I just say, congrats, that's so awesome. I can't say I'm proud of you.
Because
what they're saying online is I'm taking part of your achievement away for me.
Who's saying this?
It's all over the law. It's all over.
I can't.
You can't say proud of you.
That's.
But they email me and they say, Killian, I booked this because of what you told me to do.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm so proud of you for listening.
Right.
Well, I'm not allowed to say that anymore.
It's like, enough. I can't. What do you think about the whole quirky character thing? I don't know how to say it any other way, but you know.
Well, there's a category. If you're a quirky person, you're quirky. Okay. So I don't like the word character in commercials because there are none. If Flo's a definite character,
mm-hmm.
Captain Obvious, we cast him. He's a definite character. We give you a day or two to come up with something. Most of the time, it's just you being you placed in their scenario. So if you're already quirky, we're going to call you in when we have that quirky character. So you don't need to be that.
Got it.
Because I'm probably going to pick. So like, I'll give you a different example. It's kind of, I don't think convoluted is the word, but a little bit off topic. So you're saying about quirky characters. What I say in one of the classes is accents. Take all those off your resume because I need a girl from the Bronx. and I'm going to bring you in five at a time, and we're going to do an interview. I can tell which one of you aren't from the Bronx. Okay. So in Los Angeles, and I bet a lot of people won't agree with what I'm saying right now, but in Los Angeles, we can find anybody from any remote village on this planet. We can find them in LA. Okay. They're going to book it. So I would take that accent off and just, they're going to book the Irish guy. You know what I mean? They're going to book the Italian woman who really is Italian. Mm-hmm. In the commercial world. I'm not saying theatrical. I mean, everybody, no, everyone's Australian in LA. No one's even from America. Hollywood, Hollywood. But in the commercial world, I don't think it works from all the interviews I've done. Mm-hmm. I can tell you're not from Ireland. You know? So that's sort of what I'm saying. You don't have to put on quirky.
Right.
We're going to call on the quirky people.
Where I get that from is if, and I don't even honestly like to go out for commercials anymore because I've been, I don't know. I just feel like I don't, I feel like I don't know. I feel like I just like, it's just not for me anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. And I feel like when I see a casting and they're saying like, quirky, like we want you to be this or that, and then I'm like, do I have to get there and like do this whole character? See, I keep talking about character because perhaps I'm misinterpreting what they're asking me to do, and then I'm just like, I don't like want to be this, like, you know, go into this audition and you have 30 seconds and you're like trying so hard to be this thing. It's like, yeah, tell me what I'm doing wrong with I'm seeing this.
Here's how I'm going to answer that is that, first of all, if that's your mindset right now, then you shouldn't go out for them because you're not going to book it.
Yeah.
Because you can't get rid of that energy. Everything is energy. Mm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so that's number one. Number two is when they say we want quirky, blah, 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 what we're really saying is we want that part of you. So you don't have to call yourself Alice and, you know, change, you know what I mean? And do all this stuff and to be quirky or have a prop that's quirky, you know, or carrying one of those pin things to calm yourself down to be quirky. We want you, your quirkiness. Everyone has that.
Mm-hmm. Like an essence?
But we're also going to have, we're also going to get submissions and we're going to be able to see from headshots who are the actual quirky people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And we're going to call them in. Mm-hmm. We're going to call agents. We're going to call agencies and we're going to like, look, I need 10 quirky people from you. Give me their names for tomorrow. Blah, 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 blah. And then we're going to say that just be yourself. So, but the mindset thing is really important. I had a friend and I'm the best teacher in town. And so she was my best friend and she takes my classes and she's not booking and she's very upset and angry. And she's, every time she goes to an audition, she calls me after and she complains about the whole situation. And she's like, can I just be deadpan girl in the back of the Starbucks line who has this look when they do the thing? And I said, well, your agent can't filter that. Like, they don't know what's going to happen. We didn't send sides before the pandemic. So you don't know what's going to happen in that room. And so I was like, that can't happen that way. So just do what you do. Blah, blah, blah. And so every time this went on for so long, and every time I get a call, and then finally she had the audition that she was begging for. And then she bitched about how it didn't work and boom, 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 boom. And I was like, you know what? You need to just quit.
Yeah.
You need to quit because you're driving me crazy. Number one. And number two, you're driving yourself crazy. And you can't book with this attitude. Mm. A lot of the old pros come to me for privates because their agents make them because it's been 20 years and they think they're in a slump in quotes. And so they say, go to Killian. And a lot of them resent having to come because they've been doing this for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And so the first thing I say is the thing is you just have to, you've been doing this for so long. You know, way more than I do. You've been around, but you have to fall back in love with it. Mm. That's what's happened here. You have to fall in love with LA traffic. You have to fall in love with looking for parking. You have to fall in love with being treated badly in a lobby and sitting there for 40 minutes. You have to fall in love with the whole process. And it's just, you just need a little charge from me to remember all this stuff. You know all this stuff, but you just need to get reinvigorated because it's all part of it. You have to love this process. A lot of people don't because it's a shitty process. Mm-hmm. But if you go into that room negative, it's going to shine through.
Mm-hmm.
It really does.
And then totally. And then what do you tell people for their nerves? How can you put that to the side?
Well, if you follow the steps from Killian's workshop, there shouldn't be any.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not being flip or arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you what to do step by step. Like I have a Killian's workshop on killiansworkshop.com. You can get, I started this before the pandemic because I wanted people all over the globe to study with me. So I created, I have 10 videos for $99 and it's online. You keep them forever. And so each one of them is my adult workshop. They're like 2 to 5 minutes long, 2 to 6 minutes long. And that was on purpose because people don't have attention spans. They want a YouTube clip. But all the lessons from my 4-week class are there. Then you don't have to worry about losing your notebook because you have them forever. And also though, in the last step, and do them all in order and do the homework. But the last step is me and you in the lobby. You put your earbuds in and we go through the checklist and I calm you down.
Hmm.
And then you go into the room. So the nerve situation, there's two theories or two. I'm split. One, we need this energy as artists to get this done. So I think nerves are a good thing. And I've heard Betty White recently in an interview, I watched an interview with her and she said the same thing. Like you have to have that right before you go on stage. You have to feel scared for the energy, but then you have to overcome that when you get on stage. That's the problem, right? But also, this is going to sound real bad, but I also feel that nerves are a little self-indulgent. I mean, look, the world is in a terrible disarray. And what I say to actors in class is literally 7 billion people on the planet, half haven't eaten today. Most people would kill to have a situation where for 5 minutes they could forget their horrible situation that they're in. Would literally kill for that. And you get to walk into this room where you're not you. I mean, I'm not saying character. I'm just saying you get to be in this environment where we're at the beach and we're throwing a volleyball and it's about Hyundai. Most of the world would kill for that. So don't think of this as a nerves moment walking in. Think of this as this 5 minutes is an escape from my shitty fucking life.
Yeah. Love that.
And so then you love going into that room. Okay, I don't have to think about my family situation right now for 5 minutes. Or I just had a fight with my boyfriend or my girlfriend or whatever. Boom, boom. You know what? I don't have to think about that right now because I'm supposed to be a raccoon fighting on the floor for Cheerios.
Mm-hmm.
What a great escape.
Yeah, totally. Okay, I'm going to end with two things, if that's
yeah.
Okay. One sort of could be related to nerves, but what can someone do to build their confidence? And I don't know if that would be a similar answer.
Ah, I do. I will tell people this. I'll tell you this. Number one, when it's female and they come to my class, I've been doing this for 20 years. I don't even think they know, but I sent them a lot of people. I send every female with nerves to the S Factor, which is a pole dancing class in Los Angeles. And it's a very specific pole dancing class because there are no mirrors. There are no males instructors. It's just females in the room. It's very safe. And so I send them to that. Literally for 20 years, I've been sending people to the S Factor. Every person that went has emailed me and said, this was the most amazing experience I've ever had. Thank you, Killian. So I suggest that for everybody. My mother-in-law was 78 and took a pole dancing class.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And then what I tell everybody, male or female, is if you have these nerves, then you got to do stand-up.
Uh-huh.
Because there is nothing scarier on the planet than stand-up. Mm-hmm. And if you can get through a set, that will change everything in your life.
What if
I always recommend Judas Shelton for teaching stand-up.
Okay.
Judas Shelton in LA, she's the exact opposite of me in her teaching. So you feel very nurtured and very comforted and very safe environment to come up with these jokes and to do this practice stand-up. So I love her and her class. But those two things. And when I did stand-up, you know, and I killed, and then you got a bomb. And so I was so afraid of bombing. So I never did stand-up. And then I did it and I killed. And then one day I bombed. And what I realized, and probably real comedians will tell you this, it was so freeing. It was like almost better than when I killed, because I realized these people don't give a shit about anything I'm saying. So I could try out anything.
Mm-hmm.
It was so, because I was so scared of it for 20 years. I'm like, oh, I'll bomb and I don't want to bomb. And that's going to be the worst thing in the world. It's freeing as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once you realize they don't give a fuck about you, then you don't have to give a fuck about them. And then you could just try anything on stage.
Right.
It's really cool. Bombing's cool.
So do you have a third thing if I used to be a stripper and I am a stand-up?
Yes. Yes. Stripping is amazing. Our favorite show is P-Valley right now.
Not anymore. This is 15 years ago.
Have you watched P-Valley?
I haven't. I don't have show. It's on Showtime, right?
P-Valley is Stars.
Oh, Stars. Okay. Yeah, I don't have Stars though, but so good. It's good though. I've seen that.
And the stripper thing is so amazing because here's a thing born out of desperation, I imagine. And they're Cirque du Soleil. They have turned that into such an art.
Right.
It's insane and beautiful and wonderful. It's so cool. So like there's art in everything. It's all perspective.
Mm-hmm. And then lastly, so this whole time that we've been chatting, I'm wondering what the fuck about my eye line, because you're looking right at where am I on your screen?
You're looking right at me.
I am.
Yeah.
Right now.
But I was thinking about mine because I keep doing this when I think, and that's probably not good for an interview.
I was wondering what you recommend.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering what you recommend when someone's talking on Zoom.
Yeah, I'm probably not doing it right because I keep looking around the room.
So,
but you look at me the whole time.
Okay. So do you?
When I think of things from the past or whatever, I'm like, oh, I worked with her. I do this and I probably shouldn't.
But that's someone naturally thinking.
Yeah.
But do you suggest anything in terms of eyeline or?
No, they're going to tell you what the eyeline is.
Okay.
So they'll say into camera or not into camera.
Got it.
So then you just do again what they say.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I guess that's it. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Yes.
And shout out where everyone can find you and sign up for your class and all that.
So killingsworkshop.com. Right now we're on Zoom, but we're going to be both. Adult Workshop is where people generally start. It's a four-week program. It just became called the Adult Workshop. I'm not sure why. It's because I didn't want children in the class, so I just called it the Adult Workshop. But it's just a commercial workshop. What I say in LA is if you can drive, if you have a driver's license, you can come to class. I did have a kids workshop. I don't have that at the moment because the parents were too much for me to bear. I love the children, but I couldn't take the parents. And improv for commercials, which is joining the two, the callback class, which 30% book within 4 weeks of taking it. And I do privates. I think they're $135 for the hour. I'm not sure. But you email us for classes@killingsworkshop.com for any inquiries that you have. But everything's on the website. It's a very thorough website. And there's videos of everything. Then we have the Actors Gym, which is twice a week. And that's a gym membership, monthly subscription. And so you go to that. I have a free tutorial for self-submissions at killingsworkshop.com. And I'm on Instagram, Killings Workshop. And I do Motivation Mondays at 10 a.m. on Mondays because my philosophy for my adult life was never get out of bed before noon. Mm-hmm. Because Charles Bukowski said that. And so I decided to do it. I worked, but I never got out of bed. And so now I'm getting up earlier. And so I'm at 10 a.m. We do Motivation Mondays. And then class starts at noon. So that's on Instagram.
Is that live?
I was doing, it's live. I was doing it on Clubhouse, but I just decided to change over to in my own Instagram. And so you just ask me questions and I answer them, but I also want, it's interactive. So I want to, I hate interactive classes or when you go to an improv show, I can't stand that. But nobody was telling me anything the first time I did it. So I was like, okay, guys, it's going to be interactive now. I'm going to call you out. I want to know, like, what's your shower song? That sets the tone. And like, what do you do to stay motivated? And boom, boom, boom. And we talk about those things. Yeah. And then I also answer commercial questions. And I do it just 30 minutes on Monday.
I love it. Thank you so much. This has been
so fun. Thank you. So good to see you again.
You too.